Bree. I can hear him, breathing. Cloth rustles in front of me, followed by steps. Something glances my chin. My spine snaps into line and my muscles grit down. A feather-like touch, a fingertip, traces my jaw and dips down my neck. Goose flesh breaks out in its wake. Hot, sour breath permeates my blindfold. The Raja's stroke follows the curvature of my collarbone. My chest heaves, and I prepare to be groped. His touch carves a direct line to my pelvis. I lift my chin, refusing to flinch. I will not give him the satisfaction of knowing my fear. Raja Tarek is at fault for Jaya's injury. Her cheek would still be untouched if he had not demanded that our duels end in blood. His finger pulls away. Softness brushes against my elbow, perhaps a sleeve, and then my hair lifts off the nape of my neck. The Raja stands behind me, and his careful fingers feather through my tresses from my scalp to the ends. He grabs a loose handful of my hair.
This one.
His deep voice bores rivulets of horror into my back.
Your Majesty, I commend you on your selection. But are you certain?
Asks Healer Baka.
It is my duty to inform you that this ward has a sickly past.
A tense silence weighs down the air. I capture my breath, questioning what the Raja sees in me. I am too skinny, too tall, too homely. He has countless women already. He cannot want me.
Is she well now?
That is difficult to determine, Your Majesty, Priestess Mita replies.
I trust your healer's estimation.
She is well,
Healer Baka answers with a tenor of defeat. I wait for her to mention the tonic or my fevers, but she says nothing more. The Raja releases my hair and rubs my hip. I ball my hands into fists to resist smacking him away. His voice coarsens with finality.
I stand by my decision.
Cloth rustles, a door shuts, and the women exhale in chorus. Frigid hands scramble up my face. Healer Baka removes the blindfold. Raja Tarek is gone. The healer's strained gaze consumes my sight. I seize her wrists.
What does this mean?
Priestess Mita drapes the ivory robe over my shoulders and rubs my arms too briskly to be comforting.
It means you have been claimed.
5. Healer Baka and Priestess Mita steer me toward the chapel, each with a hand on my shoulder. My legs are stiff with shock. All of the younger daughters wait, cross-legged on floor cushions. The older ones, who just came from the claiming, are barefoot and clad in identical ivory robes, creamy against their skin, eyes, and hair. When we first congregated in the inspection chamber, I admired our elegant uniformity. Now I barely register my surroundings. Jaya motions me over to the cushion that she has reserved near her own. I split off from Healer Baka and Priestess Mita, and they lapse into urgent whispers. I do not linger to hear them, though I can fathom their disbelief. Bamboo Kali caught the Raja's eye.
Did you hear?
Jaya clutches her chest, her nose red from crying.
We were inspected by the Raja.
I nod and kneel beside her, bile winding up in my throat.
Natasha said she felt his breath across her chest.
Jaya's horrified gaze drifts inward. She sucks her lower lip.
I heard her tell Sarita she's going to live in the palace. Do you think that's true?
Maybe. Two rows in front of us, Natasha sits high on her knees, beaming smugly. Did he touch her? Jaya pulls out of her anxious daze.
I don't know. Why?
Did he claim anyone else?
Not that I heard.
Jaya's breaths shorten to quiet gasps.
I could not stop shaking.
I wrap my arms around her, guilt digging a gulch in my stomach. I have to leave her. I have to leave here. I should warn her, but the confession grips my tongue, reluctant to let go. A gong chimes, and all conversation dwindles to a close. Many faces shine with eagerness. Rumor of the Raja's visit has spread like ripples across the meditation pond. I release Jaya, but stay pressed against her side. Priestess Mita commands our attention from the front of the chapel.
I am certain by now you have all determined the identity of our benefactor. Raja Tarek was pleased with the variety of your beauty and battle skills.
She raises her fingers in a V.
He chose 2 daughters.
Gasps fly around the room. They know of Natesha, but not of me. The others speculate in hushed voices, and Jaya rests her hand on my knee. I meet her searching gaze and nod. Tears sprout at the corners of her eyes.
Quiet in the chapel!
Priestess Mita waits for silence to resume.
Both daughters will leave for Vani to live in the Turquoise Palace. However, only one will wed the Raja. The second will be his courtesan.
Jaya clutches my leg harder in question. I shake my head. I do not know which I will be. My insides coil like a viper trapped in a basket. To be a queen, a Rani, is a charmed life, the highest station any girl, orphan or not, could dream of. Certainly the Raja would not choose me to wed him over Natesha, with her heart-shaped face and abundant curves.
Natesha and Kalinda, please step forward,
says Priestess Mita. Upon hearing my name added to Natesha's, the daughters erupt in various forms of astonishment, but all reactions rapidly wane to envious mutters and spiteful glares. Even Preeta and Fallen, who have always been distant, yet polite, eye me with jealousy. I rise fluidly, head high. Whether I am to be a wife or a courtesan, there is no sense in showing my devastation. What is done is done. I will accept my fate with dignity and cry my eyes dry later. Natesha slings me a look of surprise. I join her at the front of the chapel and stare out at the kneeling group, searching for Jaya's comfort among the daggered glares. She stares bravely forward, tears dripping off her chin. Priestess Mita faces Natesha and me.
Whatever your position may be, I ask that you represent the Samia Temple and Sisterhood well. Serve the Raja with perfect obedience.
Natesha's lips twitch in triumph. I am her only competitor left, and she has arrived at the same conclusion. I am no man's bride. I clasp my hands in front of me, concealing my unsteady fingers in my robe. Candlelight flickers across the mural of Anu on one wall, and on the wall opposite a mural of his wife Ki. The painter positioned them to gaze across the chapel at each other. I would have liked to see the Raja before he claimed me, but I now stand on the edge of a cliff about to plunge into a faceless unknown.
The Raja's word is final, the priestess says. We do not defy. We obey.
We obey,
the daughters echo. I mouth the promise, my tongue still too deadened to allow me to speak. Everyone waits in silence. Quiet does not usually unsettle me. I can sketch in peace for hours, but the anticipation here is unnerving.
To join his household as a courtesan, Raja Tarek chose Natesha.
Priestess Mita swivels to me.
And to become his wife, he chose Kalinda.
I gape at her rare, approving smile, my heart falling. 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 I hit no bottom, no end, no release. I have been claimed to be a Rani, a queen. Stunned silence pervades the chapel. My face must mirror everyone else's disbelief and astonishment. Priestess Mita calls forward Sister Hetal, who brings a pot of henna. The priestess dips her pointer finger in the dye and strokes it from between my eyebrows down my nose. Though I cannot see it, there is a short line down the center of my face, a sign to all that I am to be wed. The priestess waits for Sister Hatal to return to the back of the chapel and then says,
I have more momentous news. His Majesty visited the other sisterhood temples prior to traveling to Samia. He was searching for a very special recipient, and Kalinda is his choice.
She is to be the Raja's 100th Rani!
Murmurs from the sisters rupture the quiet. I, with the other daughters, silently consider what this means. In the Parisian faith, mortal men are permitted only as many wives as Anu, who had 100. Otherwise, the sky god becomes jealous and curses the man and his lineage. But to wed the same number of women as Anu is proof of eminence. No other living sovereign has cared for 100 wives. No other ruler has the resources. Marrying me will establish Raja Tarak as the dominant monarch on the continent. The thought of so many unknown faces dazes me. I am to be the Raja's 100th Rani. He has 99 wives. 99! I understand that a man's number of wives is a sign of his wealth and power, but how powerful should a man be?
Can anyone recite the story of Enlia's 100th Rani? The priestess says.
She scans for a volunteer, but no one raises their hand.
Jaya, would you please?
Jaya stands slowly, her eyes swollen from crying. I clamp my teeth shut. I detest Priestess Mita for turning this into a preaching moment. But before I can think ahead to what reason she may have, Jaya starts.
The fire god Enlil took many mortal wives and courtesans, all of whom were blessed with astounding loveliness, enough so that the sky god began to covet his son's good fortune. So when Enlil announced that he would wed his 100th wife, Anu was wrought with his son's greediness, and would not allow Enlil more wives than he had. Anu told Enlil he could have only 100 wives and courtesans, mortal or otherwise, and he was to drown those he did not keep. Enlil was distraught. He cared for his wives and courtesans and could not pare them down to so few. In his grief, he asked his father how he should choose which of his women to retain. Anu responded by saying, "Let them decide."
Warmth seeps from my face.
No, no, no.
Jaya goes on, each word quieter than the last.
Enlil's wives would not rescind their rank. They loved their husband and honored him, but the courtesans loved Enlil as well, and they did not think that it was just that they should die. So the courtesans challenged Enlil's future wife and battled for her rank as the last Rani. Enlil's future wife was the loveliest of them all and had a merciful heart to match, but she was also a fierce contender. She defeated every challenger and held her position until she was the last warrior standing. She wed the fire god and was his favorite wife forevermore.
Well done, Jaya. You may kneel.
The priestess beams at me. I have waited all my life for her to see me as someone of worth. Now that she does, her praise repels me.
Kalinda has been claimed, but now she must claim her place in the palace. She has the great honor of defending her throne by participating in the age-old rite of rank fighting.
Her words are talons ripping into my chest. My hands betray my fear, quaking against my sides. I never thought that this would happen, or I would have remembered my lessons about the rank tournaments. Each time the Raja takes a wife, the law of the gods states that his current wives and courtesans may host a tournament in which they duel to defend or improve their position, or vie for the coveted first wife spot. These brutal battles go on for days and often end in death. This is why Raja Tarak wanted to see us duel. This is why he chose me despite my looks. I am the last wife he will ever claim, and he wants a warrior to defend her rank as his final Rani. But I cannot win. The priestess must know that. Everyone must.
My performance at skill trials was a fluke. I triumphed over Sarita, yet surely the Raja must have seen that I am not the strongest fighter. My strength came from my love for Jaya. His courtesans have trained for years for the tournament. Some of them are novices like me, but they will be weeded out. The strongest will win and wed Raja Tarak. And it will not be me.
The Raja has chosen Kalinda to represent his throne as his champion, says Priestess Mita. In her honor, his wives and courtesans will host a rank tournament, their largest ever, as this will be his courtesans' last chance to secure a spot as Rani. Let us honor his champion.
Priestess Mita brings her hands together in prayer and bows before me. The sisters at the back of the chapel emulate their leader, and all of the kneeling daughters bend forward, resting their foreheads against the floor. Natesha does not move.
Show respect for your future queen, orders the priestess.
Natesha's nostrils flare and her fingers turn claw-like. I have no doubt that she wants to toss me off the mountain, but she presses her palms together at her chest and dips her chin.
I appreciate your obedience, daughters, says the priestess, releasing them from their deference.
She wraps an arm around me and steers me down the chapel aisle to the rear door. This is happening too fast. I cannot leave now. Yet some part of me registers that I am leaving. We reach Jaya, and I tear away from the priestess's hold. I drop to my knees before my best friend and crush her against me.
I would bring you with me if I could. Come back and claim me as your servant. Promise me you will win the tournament, Kali. Promise you will return for me.
Her forward thinking overwhelms me. On occasion, a benefactor's wife accompanies him for a claiming, and together they choose a servant, usually a ward with weak fighting skills. But even if I could come back and claim Jaya, would I? No, I say.
You have to swear fealty to the sisterhood, or you could be claimed by the next benefactor who comes here.
But if I join the sisterhood, we will never see each other again.
My stomach lurches. Saying farewell to Jaya forever is unbearable, but asking her to wait for me is a tremendous risk. Too much can go wrong.
You cannot? I will not be claimed. No one will want me now that my face is scarred.
I clasp her shoulders hard.
I thought no one would want me either.
Jaya's wet eyes press upon me.
You can win, Kali. You never give up. Promise me you will win. Promise me you will come back for me?
I want to argue, but she has made up her mind. She will not join the sisterhood. She will wait for me and face more claimings. I have to win. I have to return for Jaya. I kiss her cheek above her stitches and whisper, I will come for you. Jaya grabs my hands and squeezes. I grip back hard, our fingertips turning red. Priestess Mita tugs us apart. In a teary fog, I say,
I love you. I love you.
To Jaya until I can no longer see her. The priestess leads me from the chapel and down to the lower level. She opens the same door I listened at this morning. I expect to come face to face with Raja Tarak, but Captain Nike turns upon our arrival. The captain's presence pulls me up short. I clutch my skirt and step behind the priestess.
I was told there would be two, he says. The other will be along shortly.
Priestess Mita tugs me out in front of her.
Kalinda, this is Captain Nike. Captain, this is Kalinda, the Raja's intended.
Captain Nike sums me up with a frown. I dry my tear-streaked cheeks with the back of my hand and wait for him to tell the priestess that we have met. But he sets off for another door. Priestess Mita pulls me along after him, and I stumble to keep pace with her. We cross the chamber filled with gold-etched furniture. The Raja stayed here. Where is he? The door opens to an exterior stairway that carries us to the front courtyard. Snow clouds hang low and heavy along the midsection of the mountain.
Though it feels like a lifetime since skill trials this morning, it is hardly midday. A line of horses waits, with 5 more soldiers packing saddlebags laden with swords. I am struck by how quiet they are and how big. One soldier, with arms thicker than my hips, hooks a team of white horses to the golden carriage. All of the soldiers wear saffron-colored knee-length tunic jackets, along with trousers loose around the thigh and gathered at the ankles, and securely wound turbans. The captain's uniform varies slightly, with gold embroidery around the cuffs and a stand-up collar. Still not seeing the Raja, or the general, I fidget with my skirt. "Where is Raja Tarek?" I ask. The captain addresses me while fastening his saddlebag.
"His Majesty has returned to Vani ahead of us to prepare for the rank tournament."
My disappointment equals my relief. Raja Tarek must have left immediately following the claiming. Perhaps it is best that we travel separately. This way I have time to adjust to my twisted fate before I must face it. Captain Nike continues.
"The carriage and horse team are an engagement present for you. The Raja sends his apologies that he was not here when you received it."
My mind clears of all except the captain's words. The grand carriage and horse team are mine?
"Captain Dyke!"
The priestess raises her voice to be heard over the wind.
"The second daughter may not immediately appreciate her calling. Natesha may need additional supervision."
The captain swaps a dry look with a fellow soldier.
"We will keep an eye on her,"
Captain Naik says as he mounts his horse. His sudden height startles me back a step. I stare up at him, recognition dawning. He is the lead rider, the man that I sketched. I lean slowly toward him, studying every facet of his face so that I can draw it later. He peers down at me with a peculiar look.
"Do you wish to see inside your carriage?"
I straighten and drop my gaze. Natesha and Healer Baka exit the temple behind us, bracing against the sweeping winds. Natesha goes straight to the carriage with her small bag and runs her fingers over the shiny door handle.
"Is the carriage for me?"
"The carriage is a gift from the Raja to his intended," says Captain Nike.
Natesha thrusts out her chin.
"Oh, Kalinda won't mind if..."
"Ask her if you may accompany her,"
the captain says,
"or you will ride to Vani on the top of the carriage."
I do believe that Captain Naik means his threat. He strikes me as someone who does not go back on his word. Natesha glares at me.
"May I ride with you?"
Every time she has called me Bamboo Girl thunders in my ears, but I will not be high-handed to anyone, not even someone who deserves it. "Yes," I say. Natesha huffs and climbs inside. I turn into the wind to blow my hair out of my face. Healer Baka comes over and hands me a satchel weighed down with tonic vials, charcoal sticks, my sketchbooks, a slingshot, and firing stones. My eyes blur with tears.
"Thank you."
Healer Baka draws me into her arms and speaks into my ear.
"Have a care who you tell about your fevers. Not everyone will understand. The tonic formula is inside your bag. Hide it and take your daily dosage in private."
Her sudden urge to be secretive confuses me. I am prone to fevers. What is there to understand? And even if I do not tell anyone, Natesha could wag her tongue. I want Healer Baka to clarify, but she silences me with a significant look and holds me tighter.
"You can win the tournament, Kali. I know you can."
"I will try." My throat runs dry on the breath of my hopeless promise. I cannot win. Entering the arena will be a death sentence. But I want her and Jaya to know that I did my best. A blast of wind nearly sweeps us sideways. Healer Baka releases me and returns to the shelter of the entry. Captain Nike rides his horse to the back of the party and relays instructions to his men. The soldiers squint at the moody skies, impatient to get ahead of the snowfall. The priestess does not reach out to me as Healer Baka did.
I know we have not always agreed, she says.
But I am honored to have had you as my daughter.
Be safe on your journey and keep your distance from the men. You belong to the Raja now. Any disloyalty to your future husband will merit the god's punishment.
Priestess Mita brushes away the henna flaking off my nose, where she marked me as a betrothed woman.
Remember your duty and represent Samia well.
I will, I promise. The captain calls to his men.
Mount up!
I join Natesha in the carriage. She is seated on the far side against the second window, leaving me the seat nearest the door. The procession sets off down the hillside. My eyes stream tears. Priestess Mita and Healer Baka quickly drop out of sight, and soon only the temple's familiar stone towers are visible. Lamplight emblazons the observatory in the north tower. I hold on to that beacon until distance swallows it up, and my home vanishes.
Finally, Natesha spreads out her lap blanket.
I've been waiting to escape that prison since I arrived.
I glance at her sharply. After Natesha's parents died, she was fortunate to be taken in by the sisterhood. I want to slap her mouth for her ingratitude, but I will save my reprimand for later. We have to endure these close quarters for a fortnight, down the Alpana Mountains and across the Bavia Desert. In those 14 days, Natesha will say or do something more offensive. That is a guarantee. 6. Darkness descends hours later. Our guards erect a tent and start a campfire in a nook near the canyon wall. Natesha and I are not invited to join them. We will spend our night as we did our day, inside the carriage. One of the soldiers, a boy younger than I am, with bowed head and nervous hands, brings us stones warmed in the campfire to tuck beneath our blankets. Along with the stones, the boy soldier delivers a meal of charred flatbread and spiced nuts.
"Where is the silk tent?" Natesha whines after he leaves. "Down cots, rich foods and doting servants."
I pop a cashew into my mouth. Why does she expect opulence? We are in the wilds. Considering the soldiers' rustic sleeping arrangements, I am thankful for our privacy and comfort. My single grievance so far is the size of the carriage. I have nowhere to escape from Natesha's grumbling. Thank the gods for crunchy food.
I don't see how we are expected to be confined in this...
Chew, chew, chew.
The blanket is hardly big enough to cover my...
Crunch, crunch, crunch.
They didn't offer us hot water to wash.
I reach for more nuts, but I have eaten all of them. I scrunch the paper funnel in my fist with a sigh. That is the end of my piece. Natesha glares.
You ate them all?
I sent her a long look. I am not dense. She does not seek a sympathetic ear from me. She simply does not know what to do with herself if she is not complaining. A rap comes at the door, and the boy guard comes inside.
Captain Nike wants the lamps extinguished.
Your captain cannot order us about. We are his betters.
Natesha states each word with venom. Past the soldier, I see guards kicking snow onto the campfire, dousing the flames. More snow drifts down from the night sky in thick, feathery flakes.
How will you sleep in the cold? I ask.
The young soldier smiles shyly.
We have warmed stones for our beds too, Viraji.
My heart jolts at the endearment. Viraji, intended queen.
You cannot expect us to sleep in the dark, Natesha says, voicing her infantile fears.
She turns up her nose.
We have no reason to trust our entourage will not defile us.
I would be lying if I said that thought had not crossed my mind.
I am uncertain what to make of these men. Their great strides eat up the land, and they grow dark hair on their faces. They are organized, well-trained, and strangely subdued. They are our protectors, but it is too early to tell if they can be trusted.
Guards are forbidden to touch any woman of the Raja's court, the boy guard says. By pain of death.
His grave frown ages him many years.
I do believe that the Raja has honored this threat, and the boy has witnessed the punishment.
How long have you been in the army? I say. What is your name?
Manas.
He puffs out his chest.
I have been a soldier for 2 years. After I lost my family, the Raja took me in as his bootshine boy. I joined the army on my 14th birthday.
Fascinating,
Natesha drolls. Manas ducks his head, blushing.
I will leave you to your rest.
He goes, and Natesha shrills at the door.
How can they expect us to sleep without a light? Captain Nike is
our guide to Vani. Be civil to him, if you know how. I blow out the oil lamp and pull up my blanket. Natesha settles down on the bench across from mine, punctuating her movements with angry huffs. I do not fear the night. When I close my eyes, tiny lights glow behind my eyelids. Jaya says that they are residual daylight, but I think of them as inner guiding stars. The soldiers quiet outside, and soon only the wind knocks at our door. Under night's velvet cloak, I ache to be home. I want my cot, my bedchamber, and Jaya. I cannot relax without her steady breathing lulling me to sleep. I miss her fingers running through my hair and the echo squeeze of her hand. I wonder if she regrets saying that she will wait for me. I sit up and see that Natesha is asleep. I quietly lift the curtain and peer out the window. We did not travel far today. The snow and ice slowed our descent. Seeing the observatory light from the North Tower may help me rest. Grabbing my slingshot and stones, I creep out of the carriage with my blanket wrapped around me. There is no sign of a guard on watch in the silent, still camp. Muted light from above adds an ethereal glow to the snowy landscape, and the freshly fallen snow muffles my steps up the road. Cold pries at my skin with jagged nails, yet I push on. I round a bend and look back. The carriage is long out of sight, my footprints the only guide to camp. Shivers rack my body. This is ridiculous. I could freeze before finding the temple. But I have come this far, and I do not know if I will be back. I face forward. One more rise. The path steepens. I stumble over the tail of the blanket and fall, catching myself with my hands. My fingers are ice. I wrap the blanket closer and stand. Almost to the top. I crest the hill, legs and lungs burning. I promise myself that regardless of what I see, I will turn around at the top. I look to the darkened skyline and skim for the beacon. Nothing. I set my jaw against a torrent of tears. Healer Baka would advise me not to look back, but all I see before me is my death. I will not survive the rank tournament. I will never see Jaya again. But I promised her that I would try. Shoulders hunched, I retrace my footsteps in the snow. On the second slope, my footprints intersect with another's. The tracks, nearly twice as long as mine, split off from the road and disappear into the trees. My pulse quickens, and my breath slows to deliberate streams. I load my slingshot and aim at the forest. Captain Nike stands out from the shadowed tree line. I aim between his dark, calm eyes.
You shouldn't have left camp, he says.
How long have you been following me?
Since you left. Lower your weapon, Viraji. I won't harm you.
I know that.
A partial lie.
I am cautious of his size, his strength, and his foreignness. Even so, each time we meet, my desire to stare at him grows. Am I intrigued by his being a man, or is this feeling singular to him? I lower my slingshot and trek swiftly down the road. Captain Naik trails me at an obligatory distance.
I followed you for your protection. I thought you might be running away.
I wasn't.
And what were you doing?
I stop and glower at him. I would rather not answer, but I cannot have him thinking that I will try to escape. I am here, and as unhappy as that makes me, I have to stay.
The Sisterhood does not take back claimed wards.
I wanted to see the temple beacon, I say. His pensive stare husks away my annoyance at him for following me.
I don't know if I will see my home again, I say.
The captain's stare lengthens, his eyes softening with every ragged beat of my heart. He smiles a little.
Follow me.
He turns and plods up the hill. I glance toward camp. I could return, or I could find out where he is going. Priestess Mita would be appalled that I am considering following him, but the Raja left me in the captain's care, so he must trust him. I have felt nothing unseemly from Captain Naik. But what if I have misjudged him? The captain pauses at the tree line and quirks a brow.
Coming?
I search his open face for cause to distrust him beyond the fears that Jaya implanted in me. If Captain Naik meant to harm me, he could have done so by now, but he gave me distance, even when he thought that I might run. I hasten to catch up. My rationale for joining him falls to the back of my mind with every step, and I wonder what it would take for him to smile at me again. Instead of going up the road, the captain cuts across the ridge through the trees. The faint sif, sif, sif of his steps blends into the night so well that it could be heavy-laden branches dropping their snowy burden. He spies on the shadows and pauses more than once to listen. His caution prompts me to walk quietly and be alert. We hike into a clearing. On the skyline, blue-purple shadows frost the Alpanus's triangular tips. Captain Naik points, and I follow the line of his finger to a tiny glow near the lowest peak. Samaya's beacon. A single star breaking through the night. Tears mist my eyes. We stand side by side and stare into the distance at the last sign of my home. Sometime later, I do not know how long, a violent shiver pulls me back. Captain Naik faces me and draws my blanket closer over my shoulders. His breaths steam between us, whispering across my cheek.
I hope coming here brings you peace.
Snowflakes stick to his sooty eyelashes, his eyes warm brown. I am no more afraid of him than I was in the lower level of the temple. He radiates warmth and safety, riveting me with the trust he engenders. I want to tuck myself against his tall, muscled form and curl into his body heat like a rabbit in a burrow. My cheeks flame in embarrassment. I should not feel this way. I did not react so favorably to the Raja. His touch, his voice, and his smell were repulsive. But every nerve ending in my body comes alive near Captain Naik. Beside him, my slenderness feels delicate, curvy, and even womanly. An ache to explore this new, scary feeling deepens at the back of my throat. I should turn away, but an odd fusion of curiosity and empowerment locks me in place. I never thought that a man would come this close to me without my feeling intruded upon. Compared to the other daughters, I fall short of having feminine allure. The captain's nearness does not make sense. Unless he has another reason for bringing me out here alone. My eyes shoot open in shock. Do you desire me? Captain Naik withdraws, his color rising.
I cannot. That is to say, I brought you here only to please you.
Hotness creeps up my neck. Remembering my study course on bedchamber behaviors. A sister told us that we must satisfy the desires of the man who claimed us. The daughters blushed and giggled the rest of the day. Some whispered of Anu's consorts and told stories of his touch awakening feminine pleasures. My pulse pounds harder, the ache in my throat spreading. I want to know if their whisperings are true. But the captain is not the man who claimed me. No matter how exciting and tempting these feelings may be, I would be reckless to pursue them. Captain, you are very handsome, and I am grateful to you for bringing me here, but I cannot repay you. The captain dips his chin and rubs the back of his neck.
Viraji, I never said... I did not bring you here so you would be in debt to me. I caution you to be less open about such matters.
Oh, I press my cold hands to my burning cheeks. Have I spoken out of turn?
Generally speaking, men express their interests. Women do not.
Gods, I am a fool. Captain Nike does not desire me, or he would have said so. He tries to ease my humiliation with a smile.
We should return. For your safety, and for the safety of my men. Please, stay in camp.
Captain Nike starts for the trees. The distance between us numbs all but my swelling chagrin. Is the sign of a devoted woman one who holds her tongue? Am I only to think of pleasing the Raja forevermore? Is there no room left for my own happiness? Stealing one last glance at the temple beacon, I turn away from Samia and follow the captain south, toward the City of Gems. 7. Over the next 3 days of descending from the snow-clad peaks, the terrain transforms. Evergreen trees thicken to indomitable forests, the snow melts to soil, and the air warms to tolerable temperatures. Natessa finds a stack of religious texts underneath her bench and reads non-stop, flicking the pages so that they make irritating, ruffling noises. I stare out the window at the passing scenery, each rickety turn of the wheels taking me farther from Jaya. In my nightly prayers, I plead with the gods to let me see her again in my dreams. But nightmares plague my sleep. I dream of waking by myself, and Natessa and our guards are gone. I run into the forest to find them and lose my way. Even in my dreams, I am alone. On day 4, I try to read, but the jostling carriage nauseates me, and I surrender after 2 pages. Drawing is my usual escape, but when I open my sketchbook, my mind goes blank. In the infirmary as a child, I would use my slingshot to knock empty medicine bottles off shelves. Healer Baka did not object most days. But trapped inside this carriage, I cannot do even that. By sunset, I am desperate to plant my feet on solid ground. I leave Natessa with her nose in a book and step outside. Our guards are assembled around a campfire, eating their supper beneath a starry sky. Upon my exit, Captain Nike promptly stands. My face warms, my mortification returning from the other night. A second later, his men rise.
Viraji, how may we assist you?
Captain Nike asks. My smile wobbles under the men's quiet scrutiny. I didn't mean to interrupt your supper. I came out for fresh air. The captain hesitates with a heavy pause and says,
Please, join us.
I normally would not stay after such a lukewarm invitation, but I cannot stand to be in the carriage any longer. The men take a seat, and Manas offers me his log stump. I sit, tucking my limbs close. Manas dishes a bowl of red rice and offers it to me.
Welcome, Viraji.
He points to each of the guards going around the campfire.
That's Bell, and Ihan, and Jivan, your coachman.
Each soldier nods in turn. I stash away their names in my memory for later, and I the one I have not met. The soldier seated beside Manas is as big as a bear. His ropey beard hangs to his massive chest, and cords of muscles line his thick neck. Next to his bulk, I am dainty.
That's Yatin, Manas says. If you think he's big, You should see his mother.
I smile, envisioning a bear of a woman, and my apprehension about this group of men lessens. Are you all from Vani? Manas's smile falters, but he regains it easily. I had forgotten that he had lost his family. I assume that his brief frown was about them.
We're not, but Davin is.
Davin. All eyes turn to their leader. I try not to stare, but Davin's supple mouth and sculpted jawline fascinate me. Sadly, he shaved this morning. I rather liked the dark stubble on his chin. Davin picks at his red rice, avoiding my gaze. After my forward behavior while we were alone, I cannot blame him. He must think that I am a dolt. I would leave him be, but I am interested to hear about Vani from a native. Have you been to the Turquoise Palace? I ask.
Many times, Davin says.
He does not elaborate. He does think I'm a dolt.
Davin and I met at the last ranked tournament, says Manas. Remember, Captain? It was the opening match. The Kindred had her opponent in a headlock. I remember, he says.
Perhaps it is the firelight, but it looks like Davin is blushing. The Kindred is the Raja's number one wife. Raja Tarek's current Kindred is a legend. She and her older sister were claimed from a sisterhood temple together. They were the Raja's very first wives. What happened? I ask. Manas leans forward.
The Kindred took a knife to her opponent's throat and sliced her clear open.
He draws his finger across his neck, as if I needed a demonstration.
The Kindred is undefeated. She has been Raja Tarek's number one wife longer than any other and is fully devoted to him.
I have difficulty swallowing. Even with additional training, defeating tournament veterans such as the Kindred would be impossible. I wonder what Manas would think if I told him that I do not care to wed the Raja. In fact, I do not care for Raja Tarek at all. I expect that my honesty would not be well received. Manas clearly admires the Raja. And the Kindred. Davin stands.
That's enough for tonight. Biraji, I will escort you to your carriage.
The other soldiers stand and bow. I set aside my bowl and bid them good night. Davin and I walk away side by side.
My men are taken with you, he says.
My chin ticks sideways at his disapproving tone. They're very welcoming, I say.
They're good soldiers, but you're the Viraji and the Raja's champion. You should keep your distance.
Priestess Mita taught that a woman who is unfaithful to her intended is punished by the gods. But I have not been disloyal. I merely had supper with you, I say.
That's enough to invite trouble,
Davin says as we reach the carriage. He faces me, his brows turning in.
Manas was once Raja Tarek's personal servant. If he or any of the other men should mention your friendliness toward us to the Raja, we could all be disciplined. Severely.
Davin does not appear to be threatening me, but still I ask, will you report me?
You know I won't.
His eyes hint at a secret we share. The moment in the lower level of the temple when he did not inform on me to the Raja. Or perhaps he thinks of our time together in the woods. Only now do I realize how dangerous it was for him to go off alone with me. Why would he take that risk? Perhaps he considers that pacifying me is part of his duty, but he was kind to me before the claiming when I was only a temple ward. My breath stalls. This is who he is. Back at the campfire, Yatin yanks away Manas's stump, and the younger soldier topples to the ground. Yatin's deep chuckles mingle with the other soldiers' laughter. Davin smiles at his men.
This group of baboons isn't worth being punished over.
I am not so certain. Their company is skies above Natesha's, and I am less homesick in their presence, especially Devon's. I remember how close we were the other night. His warmth brightened my whole world. Seeing him has helped me forget the miserable hours I have spent inside the carriage, but I will not endanger him or his men. I look down and mutter,
I will keep my distance.
Thank you.
His warm smile squeezes me breathless. He turns to leave and then stops.
About the ranked tournament Manas spoke of? I only attended to watch a competitor.
I do not understand why it is important to distinguish himself as someone who did not want to attend, but I nod. Did she do well?
No.
He smiles regretfully and returns to his men. Watching him go, I open and close my fists, grasping for a tangible explanation for his changing moods. If I were to sketch Devon's heart, I would draw a labyrinth of secrets. A puzzle that I will not be solving tonight. I step inside the carriage and stop short. Natasha looks up from a hand whetstone, where she is sharpening a dagger that she took from the temple.
I'm not going to kill you, Kalinda. You would be dead already if that were the case.
I will wait for the tournament, so don't go snitching to the captain about my knife. I sit across from her, my gaze tight on her blade. The tournament?
Any of the Raja's courtesans may challenge you. We all have a chance to duel for your rank, kill you, and claim your spot as the final Viraji.
Her lips twist in an ugly smile. Including me. My mind tallies the number of my possible opponents. The Raja has hundreds of courtesans. What about the Ranis?
Natasha sharpens her knife with meticulous calm. The kindred may challenge anyone she wishes, but she won't bother with you. None of the wives will. They can improve their standing only by challenging a higher-ranking Rani.
Relief sweeps away some of my worries. I will not have to battle the Raja's warrior wives. How often do they hold tournaments, I say?
As often as the Raja claims a bride. The most I remember was 6 in a year. My father went to 1. My mother fell ill soon after we arrived in Vani, and she sent my older sister and me to fetch him. Father pulled us out of the amphitheater before we got a good look at the arena, but I remember it stank of piss and blood.
Natasha's mouth turns downward.
He caught my mother's illness and both of them passed away.
I am sorry for her, but beneath my sympathy lies a twinge of envy. She knew her parents, whereas I cannot remember mine. Still, I do remember when Natasha and her older sister arrived in Samia. Not long after, her sister was claimed as a courtesan. What happened to your sister? I ask.
Why do you care?
If she's in Vani, maybe you will see.
My sister is dead.
Natasha runs the blade over the stone so hard that sparks fly.
Priestess Mita received word last year that she had died in childbirth. She had no burial. No one cares for the courtesans. The wives receive all the respect.
I'm sorry. Natasha looks up at me, her gaze hard.
Don't be. I will not live my sister's fate.
She slips the dagger into a leather strap around her calf and lies down with her back to me. My engagement gift has become a gilded cage. For 2 days I have respected the captain's request to distance myself from his men, but I cannot stand to be locked inside this carriage with Natasha any longer.
While she reads away the hours, her knife hidden the gods only know where, I agonize over how she plans to defeat me in the arena. Slit my throat, gut my belly, stab me in the spine.
Whatever method she chooses, it will not be merciful. I have to get away from her. After we make camp, at the end of the day, I gather my sketchbook. I'm stepping out. She lifts her gaze from her reading.
Going to make eyes at the captain again?
Not that it's any of your concern, but I need to relieve myself.
Are you planning to pee on your sketchbook?
I glower at her and step out under the mild night sky. The soldiers gather around a campfire finishing supper. Devon's back is to me. None of them notice me as I sit on the carriage foot rail and open my sketchbook. The glow of the campfire reaches my page, and fresh air frees my mind. I touch my charcoal to paper, and my hand flies with ease. The water goddess takes shape. Enki hovers over the sea, her wavy, dark hair swathing her body like cascading water.
She wears a shell necklace and a short skirt, and she wields a staff with three prongs at the top. Her slim waist curves out to full hips, balanced by strong shoulders and legs powerful enough to withstand any tide. Anki exudes sexuality and strength. She is as steadfast as the moon and would not be threatened by Natesha.
Are you ready to turn in?
I look up to find Devon standing over me. Time has slid through my fingers. No one remains at the fire. Everyone else has gone to bed. Devon sits beside me on the carriage footrail.
Enki, the water goddess?
You know the gods?
Very well. I studied the Parisian faith with the Brethren for a time.
I gape at him. The Brethren oversee the sisterhood temples and provide new wards to bring up for the claiming. They have no equivalent rite. Only girls are reared for that ceremony. Their temples are where general congregations worship. Like the sisterhood, serving in the brotherhood is a lifelong calling. I have never met a member of the Brethren, let alone someone who renounced his duties.
Did you swear an oath of celibacy? I say.
Devon's lips lift slightly.
Yes, but my vow was negated when I left.
I flush, realizing I have asked another improper question. How did you come to be a soldier?
My mother is a courtesan and my father is a benefactor. For bastards like me, it's either the army or the brotherhood. I thought I would spend my life with the Brethren. They were my place of peace. But the gods had a different path for me.
A lump forms in my windpipe.
You understand what I speak of, Kalinda?
He says my name in three pieces, Kalinda, each syllable as precious as the last. I do understand. The path the gods have set forth for me is vastly different than the one I want. Do you begrudge the life you've been led into? I say.
I fought becoming a soldier. My father is an army officer, a hard man who respects little other than his own importance. I thought I could hide from the part of me that stems from him, but being in the Brotherhood taught me to accept my path. I wanted to be a soldier more than I was afraid of becoming my father. Being like him was never my fate.
I envy his certainty. I thought I knew what my fate would be, but now... Devon's knee rests against mine. I stop myself from pulling away, allowing the small comfort.
Was it not fate?
He says.
When you stepped in to help your friend during skill trials?
Maybe. If protecting Jaya is what led the Raja to claim me, I would do so again with no regret. But I cannot say if that was fate. Devon watches me quietly. The sisters are nurturers and teachers, whereas the Brethren are patient counselors and protectors of the Parisian doctrine. Devon would have done well serving in the Brotherhood. His knowledge of the gods has reopened a side of myself that I thought that I had left behind. I have only been this open about my faith with Jaya. I even hid this part of my heart from Healer Baka, afraid that she would lecture me on godly virtues. But Devon understands what it is to sacrifice his will and adjust his course to align with the gods. I glance at our connected knees. If you had the choice, would you have stayed with the Brethren?
The army has its challenges. I travel too often to keep a home, but the soldiers are my brothers. I would still choose to be with them. And I would still be here with you.
His smile spreads through me like a cozy ache. I wait for him to move away, but he stays, touching me. I drink in his sandalwood scent, mesmerized by his eyes glowing softly against the night. I wonder if he would pull back if I traced the stubble on his jaw. I drop my chin and bite my lower lip. My thoughts are disgraceful. I am wrong to fuel my desires with impossible wants. These stirrings belong to my intended. I am tempting punishment by thinking of Devon in this way. I start to stand, and my sketchbook falls off my lap. Devon picks it up and offers it to me. I close my hand over my book, and our fingers brush. He turns toward me, and our knees reconnect, securing us together.
You are exactly where the gods intend you to be, Kalinda.
The gentle way he says my name sends warmth to my belly. His complexity intrigues me,